Hello and welcome to the Odds Checker Betting Show. This is your Masters preview. That's right, it is that time of year again. I'm your host, George Ellick, and I'm delighted, as I always am on our golf shows, to be joined by Odds Checker's very own tipster, Niall Lyons. And making his debut today from 21st Group is Justin Ray. Justin, as you're our new guest, very excited to have you indeed joining us ahead of this Masters preview. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and what 21st Group do as well?
Yeah, sure. So my title is head of content for 21st Group. I work on a number of different things related to golf. I work with Sky Sports 20 weeks a year, write for The Athletic during all the big events, work with the LPGA Tour on their KPMG Performance Insights. I work with Stacey Lewis and the U.S. Solheim Cup team in terms of like strategy and things like that. We work with brands. I've got my hands in all kinds of stuff, but it's all tied back to this sport we all love. Trying to tell the best stories possible with data.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. And now, you know, you and I are both quite into the data point. So I'm very much in my football work, where I do a bit of work with 21st Group as well. So I know the guys there. Maybe one day, Justin, will bump into each other in the offices when you're over in London. But yeah, I mean, now the stuff that these guys do is obviously very useful to those of us trying to find a bit of an edge.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know what we'd do without them. How did we get by 10 or 15, 20 years ago? And although maybe the betting markets were a shade more easier to make money on now, because, you know, everybody has that information out there now. It's freely available. So maybe it's tougher now than it ever was, but we'll have a go this week anyway.
Yeah, we absolutely will. Now, how's it gone for you so far this year? We've seen a whole, you know, it felt like in the last couple of years, within the betting markets, like it was fairly predictable that the winners were coming from a certain chunk of the market. Not in 2024, where we're seeing a lot of big price winners on the PGA Tour, a lot of surprise results. How have you found it?
Yeah, well, I'm absolutely delighted to be ahead for the year and comfortably ahead at that as well. We'll see Jake Knapp and at 50-1 and Austin Eckrod at 100-1. Those two winners really, really help. We got Scheffler as well. So for the three winners so far in the PGA Tour, Jake Knapp and Austin Eckrod were obviously two totally different tales. We didn't really know what Jake Knapp was going to come up with on the final day in Mexico, having a four-shot lead. But boy, did he give me the willies over that front nine. And then, you know, I thought that he had absolutely no chance there. And his recovery work down the last nine holes was absolutely tremendous. And then Austin Eckrod, of course, at PGA National, was one of those ones where if you're on him, pre-tournament, that was just a dream to watch the final. So, well, you know, having to sleep into the Monday, and a Monday finish wasn't ideal. I never liked those, but the way he played those final 18 holes was absolutely perfect, to be fair. So, yeah, plenty of big priced winners, but absolutely delighted to be ahead.
And Justin, you know, talking there of Knapp and Eckrod, we obviously saw Malnati win a couple of weekends ago as well. I mean, there's a lot of talk around, you know, what's happened to the PGA Tour, I guess, off the back of LIV taking a lot of the golfers who'd normally be towards the top end of the market in the PGA Tour events. And I guess that's now working its way into events like the Masters, where there are fewer LIV players playing and you've got players like Eckrod making their debut this time around. Do you think there is like a weakening of the field generally going into these, or do you think these players are there on merit and maybe it's just that, you know, they've got their breakthrough in terms of getting in the winner's circle a little bit earlier than they maybe would otherwise?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. I mean, I think that's just a natural occurrence when you take players of nature like Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Cam Smith, and move them out of the field, then inherently it's going to be a little bit weaker. I think that's what makes these major championships this year so interesting, though, is that, you know, we're finally getting all these guys together when we haven't been able to see that over the first 4 months of the season. There's a little bit of an ebb and flow in terms of, you know, first-time winners and unexpected winners in the sport as is. And I think maybe there's just a little bit of a perfect storm so far this year in terms of, yeah, these guys are getting a few more opportunities because there are some players who are not in the field. But this naturally happens sometimes at the beginning of seasons and in stretches on the golf calendar normally, and it's all kind of come to a head this year with all the unexpected winners we've had. So, but like I said, I think that just makes what we're going to experience at the Masters just all the more exciting, because we finally get to have Koepka and Rahm in the same field with, you know, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and Scottie Scheffler. So it adds a little bit more emphasis to these big weeks.
Yeah, it definitely does. Well, We've got a lot to get through, so let's start looking at the weekend's golf. We are recording this due to Niall having a very, well, Niall and Justin having busy calendars next week. I've got absolutely nothing to do next week. I'll be pouring over the data Monday through to tee off on Thursday, trying to limit how many bets I have, I reckon. But yeah, we're recording this at about 3:30 on Friday afternoon. So they're just teeing off the second round of the Valero. Obviously, that means this is caveated by some of the players that we're talking about may do different things over the next couple of days. You know, Rory McIlroy might win by 10 shots, which would affect the way we talk about him. He might miss the cut. Unlikely after his decent opening round on Thursday, you have to say, although you never know with Rory. But now looking ahead, last year was a bit of a funny Masters because we had big issues with rain. It was a stormy weekend, which means that given you know the November Masters as well, when you're looking at the last four events, there are two where the conditions weren't necessarily how you'd expect them to be. What's the forecast looking like this time around, and how much does that impact the way you look at the form in those two events?
Yeah, well, certainly when Dustin won during the COVID year, it was extra soft, and you see that in the scores. I think he shot 20 or 21 under par or something. Usually we're looking around the 10 to 12 under mark to win this, so it was a lot easier that year. And
you say there's an asterisk next to his name for that win.
But last year was, as you say, it was quite stormy. It was very cold the start of the week as well. And although we had a winner in John Rahm, he has faced those conditions before, and he won at Port Stewart in tough conditions, and he's won on links, you know, a handful of times as well. He won, but only three of the top 15. We're non-Americans, so it doesn't tell us much in terms of, you know, does a cold week or a blustery week or thunderstorms change the results, so to speak. I don't think it does. It obviously, if the course was softer, it's obviously going to suit the longer hitters. And I think there is some rain forecast, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But I think at the minute, as far as I can see, thereafter it gets pretty dry. Maybe you've got a more insightful forecast being over in the States, Justin?
Not much more than what I've read from folks who are on the grounds already for the Augusta National Women's Amateur, and the early feedback is that the course is in immaculate shape. My forecast that I saw, look, that's always a malleable thing, obviously, and I'm only looking at my phone. I'm not a meteorologist, but it looked pretty good for the week. I mean, a little bit maybe chance of rain early Thursday, maybe early in the week, get a little bit, but yeah, maybe that'll soften up the golf course just a little bit. I don't think it'll be obviously the extent we saw last year. I mean, you mentioned kind of the little bit of miserable conditions. I thought what was really interesting was just how many fairways players hit and how maybe the softening of the course lessened the rollout. The field hit 75% of the fairways last year. That was the highest in any Masters since 1998. It also led to the misses when you did miss the fairway being a little bit more penalized. There was the second lowest greens in regulation rate after a missed fairway on the PGA Tour last year at Augusta National, and that's not normally what we see. So I think there's going to be maybe a little bit of a lessening of that. That might not be a trend that continues with the better conditions. But yeah, it's the weather looks pretty promising, and the early returns from everyone out at AM was that the course is in immaculate shape.
I guess, Justin, to that, but you know, the fact that it was softer and therefore less rollout might explain why you look at the three players who went into Sunday with the best chances in Koepka, Rahm, and Hovland, the three guys that hit the ball absolutely miles. So in terms of it suiting the Bombers, you know, we know that Augusta is a track where generally big hitters do well. And I guess that brings me on to the next question, which I've asked Niall every year for the last 6 years. So I won't ask him again this year. But, you know, there's always so much talk about what player thrives at Augusta. You know, it used to always be the talk that it was putters who, you know, you had to putt well. But then kind of as the data revolution in golf came out, it seemed like that was less the case. Then there was the whole, you know, you can't fade it. And then, you know, Dustin Johnson went and won with the lowest score ever at Augusta 4 years ago. You know, what do the numbers say? What's the profile of golfer that people should be looking at when they're looking at trying to pick a Masters winner?
So the adage that Augusta National is a second shot golf course has really proven true in the modern era of data, like you mentioned. Seven of the last nine Masters winners have ranked sixth or better that week in strokes gained approach. 81% of tournament winners since 2015 have had the rounds have been positive in terms of gaining strokes on the field with your approach play. That's slightly higher than the overall rate when you look at all tournament winners in the last decade. I mentioned the less rollout last year, and yeah, I do think that probably helped the longer guys a little bit more. We also saw John Rahm put together one of the more accurate ball striking performances we've ever seen by a winner in terms of both fairways and greens in regulation. He was the first player to win the Masters hitting, I think it was 85% of fairways, 75% of greens, since and Crenshaw in 1995. So you're talking about like a totally different way of playing the golf course. This is before it was Tiger proof. It was very different. So I think there'll be a little more of a normalization, and it'd be more of a second shot rewarding conditions this year in terms of comparing it to last year, where distance was a little bit more significant.
Yeah, it's interesting over the last couple of years, looking back, how, you know, when you look at the top five in each of the last couple of years, driving distance doesn't feature that heavily. You know, even, you know, Rahm was 24th in driving distance, Koepka was 9th, but there was nobody else in the top five inside the top 25. And then you look to the year before, obviously Scheffler was 16th in driving distance, McIlroy was first, but the places, Matsuyama, when he won, he was 47th. The places are actually littered with golfers who are outside the top 30 for the week in driving distance. And I think, although obviously hitting the ball far helps at Augusta, I don't think it's maybe as important as what it once was. And driving out, obviously with the ball rolling out, and I think some changes have made to the course, especially 11 and 15, for example, as well. Where runouts can be slightly more punishable than what they once were, that driving accuracy does tend to come into things slightly more than what it used to in bygone years. You know, Henley made the places last year. He finished first in driving accuracy. Rahm was fourth. But driving accuracy, certainly in the stats, features a bit more prominently than what it used to.
To your point, now the last 3 years, a missed fairway penalty at Augusta National has actually increased by about a tenth of a shot. That doesn't sound like a lot on the surface, but that adds up over the course of 72 holes and can be a little bit more valuable. I think it speaks to the changes that they made in response to, you know, 2019 was the lowest scoring average that we'd ever seen at the Masters over 72 holes. And then we had the record-breaking Fall Masters too. So I think that the changes that Augusta made probably modified that just a little bit and made misses a little bit more penalizing.
And interesting, Justin, I noticed you tweeted yesterday the five players, or in the last 5 years, the most birdies and eagles at the Masters. And Patrick Reed tops that with 86, Cameron Smith 84, Xander Schauffele 80, Hideki Matsuyama 79, John Rahm 79, Jordan Spieth 78. Again, you look at that list and it's not bombers. Like it's players who, you know, it plays into the second shot golf course ideal. So interesting that it does feel like kind of the perception of who is best set or best suited to Augusta has kind of changed over the years. Let's look at the market itself. I'll run through the odds checker grids. Here up on the grids or up on the app, you can find the best prices, the best bookie offers, free bets, best place terms as well. Ball Sports already pushed out to 8 places. I'm sure we'll get more and more as we get closer to tea time on Thursday. And obviously Niall's tips will be straight to the app when he does post them early next week. And you know, the selections he put up today, purely indicative rather than set in stone as to what they're going in that column. Scottie Scheffler is the 4-1 favourite. That price has tumbled from about 9-1 a few weeks ago. Rory McIlroy 11-1, John Rahm 14-1. Brooks Koepka 20-1, Xander Schauffele 20-1, Jordan Spieth 22-1, Hideki Matsuyama 25-1, Wyndham Clark and Ludvig Åberg, as we'll talk about later, two rookies, both 28-1, Joaquin Niemann, the star player on the LIV Tour this season, 28-1, Cameron Smith 33s, Will Zalatoris 33s, JT 33s, Hovland, obviously so good for the first 3 rounds last year, 33-1, Patrick Cantlay 33-1, we could go on. A lot of quality players in there, but we've absolutely got to start with the man at the top of the field and the man who's topping leaderboards left, right and centre, Scottie Scheffler. I mean, he's already a Masters winner, Justin, and, you know, he's the kind of price in the market that we haven't seen since Tiger in his prime, really. How good is Scottie?
If Scottie putts average, he's going to be very difficult to beat. I mean, if he just putts a little bit better than he has on average over the course of the season so far, he's going to be really hard to beat. That's how big the gap between himself and the field is from an approach play perspective. It's mammoth. He has the best – add on to that, at Augusta National, since he made his debut in 2020, he has the most strokes gained ball striking per round. So he loves the play and has performed incredible. Oh, and by the way, if he misses his target, he's in the top 10 on the PGA Tour this season in strokes gained around the green. So for me, the look, he's always going to get compared. You said the shortest odds since prime Tiger. for me, historically, the comparison isn't so much Tiger Woods as it is Vijay Singh. In 2004, Vijay won 9 times. He was ranked 129th in strokes gained putting. He was 187th putting from 4 to 8 feet. He was one of the worst putters on tour from 4 to 8 feet. And he won 9 times that season. So that's kind of the comparison I make, is that if Scotty is able to putt just average, a little bit above average, someone's going to have a career week to knock him off.
No, well, how do you see that 4-to-1 price? I mean, I, like everyone else, I'm just kicking myself that I didn't back him after, you know, when the putter seemed to get a bit hotter. What I would say is that even though he's been had positive strokes gained from putting in his last three tournaments, it's trending the wrong way. Like that, it was just positive last time out. We probably can't be, you know, Scheffler backers can't be confident that he's going to putt okay, can they? But how do you see him at the prices that he is now?
It's difficult. You know, I've been poring over this now, the Masters, for about a week now, the betting market, and I've shared some messages with yourself, George, as well, and I'm awful confused as to who to back, and the balance is tipping, you know, almost every day, and I don't know what that tells me, and maybe it tells me that, you know, there's not a surefire bet out there other than Scotty Scheffler, and maybe you should just stick to the one and done and try and get him, and there's every reason to go in and back him. The only thing is that you can't really get involved elsewhere. You're just hoping for the best. You know, his putting obviously is a concern, but it depends on how, I don't know, if the greens get really fiery, which they probably will looking at the forecast over the weekend, it could become an issue. It's also going to be an issue for almost everybody else in the field as well. So that kind of difficulty is, the playing field is somewhat narrowed, and the gap isn't as wide as what it might have been on a different course. But what is there to say that's not already said about him? You know, his form coming in here is very similar to what it was when he won a couple of years ago. And there's so many on the PGA Tour, including Rory. Who knows what McIlroy does this week in Texas? His irons have been off for most of the year. He started, I think he's, before coming on this call anyway, he's 22 holes without a bogey so far. So I'm hoping that he hasn't made one in the first 10 minutes of this podcast.
Judging by his price at the moment, I think he might have done, because he's 14-1.
That is not good. That suggests a double, if anything.
I mean, it would mean that he hasn't made a bogey. So no, it's just one. He's got a shot, but you know, he's still 300. But
there's still so many of them on the PGA Tour that just haven't fired this year. Cantlay for one, Hovland, which we maybe talk about later, is another. You know, it's relatively weak from some of the game's big hitters, Spieth included, until this week. Who knows, what he started well today, but so everything points towards Scheffler, and certainly I could not put anyone off even getting involved at the price of 4-to-1.
I don't want to put you on the spot in terms of putting numbers out of nowhere, but like watching Scheffler last year at Augusta, despite the fact that he ended up finishing tied 10th, it felt like he basically solved it. Like I, from tee to green, I hadn't seen anything like it. He was giving himself so many chances on every hole. I think, if I remember correctly, he was either last or kind of bottom five for strokes gained putting in the whole field.
Yeah, it's kind of the story of Scotty Scheffler week in, week out, right? His iron play, his ball striking, his performance off the tee, around the greens, it's all as good as it gets, basically, in terms of professional golf. But if he putts, you know, average, above average, he tends to contend and maybe win. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily always happen. So, yeah, no, the numbers speak to just how unbelievable he's been ball striking around Augusta National in his 4 starts there. Top 20 finishes in all 4 of the times that he's played at the Masters. It's just the question I posed at the beginning. If he putts average, he's going to be tough to beat.
Well, let's move down the list a little bit and talk about Rory Nile. You put him up. A fair chunk. It was a 4 points win this weekend. He started pretty well, despite that bogey that I had to inform you about just now. It does kind of feel like, because he's second favourite, so like, and he'll probably go off second favourite regardless what happens over the course of the weekend. But it does well, at least to me, feels like the weight of expectation, partly because of Scheffler and partly because of his middling form in the PGA Tour, means there'll be less pressure on him. There's not quite that burden of expectation that we know sometimes he does falter under. Could that help him?
Yeah, I think it definitely could. Another big aspect that could help him too is, you know, the amount of the big PGA Tour golfers that are out of form. So I don't think that maybe has quite been factored into his price. We've seen him go off shorter than this. We've seen him go off bigger than this. What happens in the next week, who knows? But the weight of expectation is huge on him. And, you know, I think it was at the start of this week, I've seen him talking about in the press conference, talking about how disciplined you need to be around Augusta, that it's such a grueling test for 4 days and all. And there's no doubt about it that Rory McIlroy thinks too much about this tournament. He overthinks it. He almost overplays it. It's just not a good preparation. Every year he changes his approach almost every year, whether he plays too much, he doesn't play, plays too little. Plays some events on the European Tour at the start of the year, then skips some of them another year. It's difficult to get the balance right. And I think at the start of his year, almost every single year is geared towards preparation for the Masters. And I think it's almost built up too much in his mind and even in his team. It's difficult. It's going to be a difficult line to get over in his career. Not that he can't do it, but, you know, Scheffler aside, maybe this is a year we should consider him, simply because the other guys are so woefully out of form. Obviously, you've got the likes of Wyndham Clark, but he could be a negative that he's a first-timer here. But McIlroy certainly arrives here with a big chance. It's just the mental side of the game, I think, around here. You know, even what I watched this morning, a couple of wedge shots that he flared outright. These just creep into his game almost all the time, and his iron play has been the problem all year. He was 22nd in strokes gained approach the first day in Texas. We'll see what materializes over the next few days. If he has a really good week with the irons, then I think he comes, you know, you have to consider him a fair bit more than what you were at this moment in time.
I think everyone was anticipating and expecting a lot from last year, partly because of that incredible round on Sunday where he forced himself into second and he held that bunker shot on 18 and looked to be enjoying himself at Augusta, which we haven't always seen. And then, of course, he missed the cut last year. But if you take out that missed cut, Justin, and you look at his form from that Masters in major tournaments, he finished second in the Masters in 22 and then eighth in the USPGA, tied fifth in the US Open, third in the Open Championship, tied seventh in the PGA, second in the US Open, sixth in the Open Championship again last year. Like, that is like unbelievable numbers in terms of consistency for a player going to these major tournaments.
Yeah, I, going back to your point earlier about less attention, I think it can only be beneficial, because the guy goes into every major championship with a giant bullseye on his back, especially when you're trying to wrap up the career Grand Slam. Rory, since he won the PGA Championship in 2014, so since the beginning of this 2015 major season, 20 top 10 finishes in majors. Not only is that the most of any player, he's the only guy in the modern era to have a 9-year span with 20 top 10s in majors and no wins. The only one. I mean, that speaks to the pressure that builds up on him. And I think some of the numbers at the Masters kind of reflect that. You look back at since 2019, round one at the Masters, he's 9 over. Round two, he's 1 over. Third round, he's 7 under. Final round, he's 15 under par and gaining 5 strokes around on the field. And I think that that's a progression, maybe not just of adjusting to the golf course or what it might be, but there's less pressure if you go on throughout the week and you're not in contention. You're able to go and just play freewheeling, and he's as ebullient, bouncy self down the fairways, you know, with peak Rory.
Those numbers include a horror show on the final round as well, whenever he was in the lead, of course.
That's just since 2019.
So, since 2019.
So more recent years. But yeah, no, he does look the demons of 2011. I feel like he erased that when he got to congressional a few months later and won by a zillion. But I think the less attention is only going to be beneficial. My big question, Niall mentioned it, his iron play has been really substandard, especially by his, you know, career standards over the course of the season this year. There's been talk about him working with Butch Harmon or just get a second opinion, which is interesting. But it sounds, you know, look, I'm more of a numbers guy than a, you know, narrative thing when it comes to predicting these things. And, you know, his approach play numbers just are not enough for me to back him going into the Masters this year. But I do think, like you said, you know, the more top end guys not being necessarily in full flight, you know, maybe that's a reason to believe this could be the year. 10th tries a charm to wrap up the Grand Slam, maybe.
No, what has to happen between now and when you dust off the typewriter and start penning your thoughts next week for Rory to be included in the staking plan?
Well, as Justin mentioned there, I think it's simply down to the iron play. If he ranks inside the top five, maybe even the top 10 in Texas, then I think you'll have to consider him, because his iron play at Sawgrass last time out, that was his best week on approach play since the FedEx St. Jude last August. So there were signs at Sawgrass. If those signs continue this week, then we'll see. But yeah, it's going to be the iron play that makes the decision.
Let's talk about last year's champion, John Rahm. And, you know, in this conversation, I think we have to start it with a general conversation around the players who've been playing at LIV, on the LIV Tour. Joaquin Niemann, of course, comes in as the best player on that tour. Bryson DeChambeau playing well, but still yet to prove that Augusta is, in fact, a par 67 for him. Cam Smith has obviously shown some brilliant form around Augusta before. Brooks Koepka's fourth favourite, having obviously gone very close before a 75 on Sunday. But from a numbers perspective, because it seems a bit like I'm sitting here as someone who watches the PGA Tour. I have tried to watch LIV. I really struggled to get into it, and I turned it off pretty shortly afterwards, and I haven't really been tempted to go back. And therefore, I'm kind of, in my mind, not going to back any of the LIV players. So I just feel like I don't really get them or know them or understand the level of golf that they're playing. But hopefully, Justin, you can kind of help understand, you know, when Joaquin Niemann is currently the best player on the LIV Tour, how does that translate to this field?
Well, the first thing about LIV is that they just haven't played that much golf. I mean, I think that, what, there have been four events, and then the Miami event's going to start here in a few hours after we go finish up this podcast. But they released their first cluster of strokes gained data from the course of the season. This is something that I've seen a little bit of behind the scenes, but this is the first time it was made publicly available by their media people. You know, Niemann's approach play numbers are pretty promising, more than a stroke gain per round on what they dubbed medium length approach shots. But look, it's 12 rounds to deduce from. And look, Neiman's been their best player out there, and maybe he's somebody you take more of a look at simply because of how good his approach play has been, but he hasn't done a ton of major championships so far. When it comes to a guy like Brooks Koepka, being at LIV almost doesn't change what your approach on him, because when he was on the PGA Tour, he didn't seem to take the regular events overly seriously, and he said as much. And in the major championships since, obviously, 2015, he's been the most successful elite performer year in, year out. Cam Smith, you look at his numbers on LIV, and it's just like what we would expect if he was on the PGA Tour. He's absolutely brilliant on and around the greens, and, you know, drives it all over the place. And the thing about Cam is, in the major championships over the last 2 years, he's second in strokes gained approach per round among qualified players. So, you know, he's somebody who has had, you know, runs at Augusta National before. I tend to there's no golf course in men's professional golf where past performance is more indicative of success than Augusta National. So maybe that's something you take more into account with some of these LIV guys. Your par 67 reference to Bryson, I find amusing. This is no shade at him, but he's played 24 rounds at Augusta and he shot 68 or lower once. So I think he probably,
that's in the same way that the courses I play at are a par 72 for me, which is correct. I just always shoot 10 over par, so that's fine.
Right. So, I mean, look, no, I think if he could go back in time, he probably wouldn't have made that comment if you could have, you know, truth serum. But yeah, no, the LIV player question is still a difficult one for me. I do think that it's helpful that there is a little bit more data available. But I think you got to take everything with a grain of salt and know that, look, this isn't quite the same setup. You know, 54 hole events, shotgun starts, kind of feels like no pressure. It doesn't mean as much as, say, John Rahm's incredible form on the PGA Tour, winning tournaments going into the Masters last year.
And now, this is something I mentioned to you when we've been exchanging a few messages over the last couple of days, is it does, John Rahm is what, 14 to 1 currently to win Masters. And it feels like if he had been playing on the PGA Tour over the last 3 months and had similar finishes to Rory, he'd probably be around Rory's number. And to me, I wonder if that makes sense. Like, has John Rahm become a worse golfer because he's playing fewer events on LIV in such a short space of time? But I know you haven't been too impressed with what you've seen of him over the last couple of months.
Well, I'm surprised his results just haven't been that better. I thought he would mop up a couple of these events pretty quickly, and it hasn't materialized. His results aren't that bad, you know, two eighth places, a fifth and a third. But I'd be more concerned about the defending champion record. These things are up there to be shot at, you know what I mean? And I wouldn't be surprised if if these things are toppled any year, even the debutante thing as well, especially this year. But whether it's the champions dinner, the preparation, everything that goes into the week, media obligations or whatever, the record of defending champions down this last 15, 20 years is really, really poor. So would be more concerned about that than his play on the live tour to here. He's played reasonably well. I do think he's been outshone a little bit by Joaquin Niemann, and we'll maybe get into it here, but I think more or less double the price Niemann is than John Rahm's, slightly more appealing.
Yeah, let's talk about Niemann then, Noel, because I know you've been, and not to get your trumpet out for you, you've been backing him from a big price for the last couple of months.
Yeah, thankfully I'm on at 66 to 1 a fair bit. When he started winning at the back end of last year and the start of this year, I would really make a case. It's kind of a bold statement, but I would make a case for him being possibly the fourth best golfer in the world right now. I think he's played that well, especially in Australia at the end. He was quite close to making the top 50 in the world at the end of the year. You know, he had a good run there in Australia. Obviously, played well in the PGA before winning the Australian Open the following week. Since then, he's won at Mayakoba and Jeddah. So top fives as well this year in Oman, Hong Kong, and the Dubai Desert means he's only been outside the top five once in his last eight starts. He's got the lowest scoring average on the LIV Tour this year. And crucially, he ranks first in par four scoring on the LIV Tour this year as well. And that's one stat that's highly important around Augusta. People talk about the par fives, and it's crucial to make hay on those holes for sure across the week. But I think where it's won and lost really is on the par fours, and the difference between the contenders and often the winners is just how they perform on the rest of the par fours during the week. So hopefully that bodes well for Niemann this week as well. One big negative is that he hasn't played overly well in majors to date, and he misses that, you know, stepping stone that they often make before going on to win a major. Now, Wyndham Clark managed the US Open, and I was on him as well. He managed his victory without that stepping stone. So it can happen, and it can happen to special golfers, and maybe Niemann is one of those. He did get his first top 20 at Augusta last year, which is obviously one of the trends you would look to. You wouldn't like to back a golfer here who hasn't really managed, bar debutants, hasn't managed a top 20 before. Maybe shooting 69, 3 under par the first round in 2022 alongside Tiger shows that he could maybe deal with the pressure around here at Augusta, even though he hasn't been in contention, so to speak. But shooting a good round with Tiger that year with all the attention on him would have been fair enough. So yeah, I make the case that he's a much better prospect around the 25-28 to 1 mark than the likes of Victor Hovland, Patrick Cantlay, even Jordan Spieth, who's shorter than him. I think he makes more appeal than Ludvig Åberg as well, who I'm in agreement with everybody else, an absolute superstar, and I love him. But I certainly think that Niemann could be alongside maybe Schofield in the market, his fourth or fifth favourite here, and anything bigger than 20 to 1 still appeals, even though I'm on at much bigger prices.
Yeah, that 28 to 1 is with BetVictor, Betfred, and Star Sports and Betway. If you agree with Niall that Niemann still looks a big price. You mentioned Åberg there, so let's talk about those two rookies in Wyndham Clark and Ludvig Åberg, who've, you know, Clark obviously comes into this as a major winner. So talking about him as a rookie in any sense is a bit ridiculous. But Justin, they look to be two guys, especially when we talk about a second shot golf course, distance not really mattering, but good approach. Sorry, distance not, you know, having distance being no bad thing, but being having a laser like iron play. I mean, they fit the bill, don't they?
Yeah, the ball flight of both of those guys is the first thing I think of, you know, in terms of they able to the shot shaping ability and just the sheer, you know, height at which they're able to hit their irons and get into tight spots on greens. It's what translates to being an elite player in the game today. You mentioned Clark being a Masters rookie. I still think there's some weight to that, even though he is a major champion. He's the first player to make his Masters debut as the reigning U.S. Open champion since Orville Moody in 1970. I just think it's a crazy storyline. And Niall mentioned that.
How did Orville get on?
What's that?
How did Orville get on?
I think he finished in the top 10. I got to go back and look, okay. But he had a good week. But
he's got a great name.
Yeah. It is. It's a great old time golf name from back in the 70s. But Niall mentioned this kind of stepping stone nature to winning a major. You think about how many close calls Jason Day had before he broke through and won. How many Jim Furyk had, Phil had. It's rare that you get the guy who goes from, you know, a PGA Tour middle of the pack type player into just the utter superstar status that Clark has enjoyed over the last 12 months or so, since he, again, less than that, when he won Wells Fargo last spring. So both guys are interesting to me this week. They're going to get a lot of conversation because of just the sheer talent ability. Åberg was the first player to ever play in a Ryder Cup before playing in a major. It's not just his Masters debut, it's his first major period. So it's kind of brand new territory for him. But he's so immensely talented that I don't think anyone's going to be surprised. I'd be surprised if he contends Sunday. But if he goes out and shoots a 67 or something in round one, I don't think anyone's going to be overly shocked.
I think just this year, I don't ever remember. Don't remember many debutants, never mind two, in the market who are, you know, around the 25-1 mark. I can't recall anybody in recent years being this short who's a debutant. And now we've got two this year. It's definitely the most likely year, I think, that we see a debutant winner. And I really like, I'm a massive fan of both golfers. I favour Wyndham Clark slightly, simply because of his iron play is absolutely tremendous. And obviously he's done the major thing as well. And often we see down the last decade, if anybody wins multiple majors, they win them in a short space of time, which Wyndham is very capable of. He's obviously two runner-ups this year at Bay Hill and Sawgrass as well. He's a big, big-time player. I would say at this moment in time, he's favourite for me. I've got about three guys who have nailed on, who I'm definitely going to bet. But the fourth one, who I'm weighing up over, I think Wyndham Clark's favourite to take that spot at the minute, even though he's a debutant. I just can't get a handle on the debutant thing. I think it's going to be toppled any year. I think golfers come on, especially the way that we've seen them breed on the PGA Tour down this last 5 or 6 years, they just come ready. I think the debutant thing at Augusta is going to fall soon as well.
I agree. I think it's time to move Fuzzy Zeller off that porch. He's been there since 1979. But you think about Will Zalatoris a few years ago, Jordan Spieth and Jonas Blix nearly winning in 2014. There's Sam Bennett, the amateur last year, who was part of the conversation until the final round. It's really just, you know, we saw the first amateur breakthrough and win on the PGA Tour since Mickelson earlier this year. The guys come in more ready, more used to big time golf, the scope of these college and junior golf tournaments in the United States. They're playing against these guys since they're, you know, young players, like, dude, 11, 12, 13 years old. So players are more primed than ever to step into these big moments and not be overwhelmed by it. So I agree with you, Niall. It's just a matter of time before it falls, and it might happen this year.
Do you think part of that could be to do with the way that players now use data to prepare for tournaments? Where if you go back 20 years or so, debutants were basically coming in blind and having to learn on the job. Whereas now, you know, I can be pretty confident. I don't know whether they're 21st group clients or not, but Wyndham Clark and Ludvig Åberg will turn up knowing exactly, you know, what they need to do, and will have their kind of course management already mapped out, despite probably having never played Augusta National until the week.
It certainly helps. I mean, remember the mythology around Ben Crenshaw and his local caddy from Augusta National, and that was the key to him unlocking some of the secrets. You don't need mythology at this point. Like, we have all the data and all the information. If you want to learn as much as you could possibly conceive wanting to learn about the golf course, Augusta has still does a pretty good job of keeping things a little more under wraps than other places, but yeah, it's all there. And I think that's a great point. It does add to the level of being able to have some semblance of experience and knowledge before you've ever stepped on property.
Let's move on to someone I know you're very keen on their chances this weekend, Xander Schauffele, who is 20-1 currently, has kind of become that player on tour who seemingly can't get over the line. You know, he's got 7 professional wins in his career, but had no wins since 2022. Went close at the Players a couple of weeks ago with back-to-back 5s on the back 9, letting Scotty Scheffler march through with that incredible 64 on the Sunday. But Niall, in terms of, again, major finishes, someone who has been knocking on the door to win his first major for, you know, 5-6 years now, and a decent Masters record, and coming in very good form, it's not hard to make a case for his chances, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you're scrambling about in the dark with some of these golfers who aren't in great form this year, and if you don't want to back Scheffler at 4-1, I think Schauffele's got to be your next point of call. You mentioned there his major record. He's got 15 top 20s in his last 19 majors. It's an absolute unbelievable record. And you'll probably get, you know, around 4-5, maybe a top 20 finish next week, which could be a bet in itself. But I think there's a narrative around him here about not getting over the line that's slightly harsh. His last victory came at the Scottish Open in July of 2022. Look at the golfers around the same price bracket, and you'll see similar. Jordan Spieth's last win was April of 2022. Patrick Cantlay's was in August of 2022. Justin Thomas was in May of 2022. So these guys are all in a similar boat, but it's only Schauffele that we hear about who has an ability to get over the line. He's won big tournaments down the years.
Is that not because he's the one who's been in contention consistently and hasn't managed to do it?
Yeah, well, that certainly can't be considered a negative going into the week. But you also look at since his win in Scotland in 2022, he's only had one 54-hole lead. So maybe everyone's just being slightly harsh on not getting the victory in that time. His final rounds. The final round 64 by Scotty Scheffler beat him at Sawgrass. Obviously, he would have been on a playoff, but it took a 64 from Scotty Scheffler to get past him at Sawgrass. Quail Hollow last year, where he was second, he obviously Wyndham Clark beat him, the eventual US Open champion. He was alongside Hovland in the Tour Championship over the 72-hole mark, shot the same score. They were 7 clear of third place. Obviously, Hovland won the event due to the handicap system at the start, but they both shot the same score over 72 holes, 7 clear, 3rd. So I don't think there's really a negative. I don't buy that getting over the line is a huge, huge issue, and I think it'll just happen sooner rather than later. Obviously, at the Masters, it's going to be a hard task as it is. But since the start of 2022, 72%, he's played 55 events, 72% top 20 and 32% top 5. It's an incredible record he has, and that almost makes him an each way bet to nothing with the places you'll get if you're getting 16, 18 to 1 or whatever. I think there's 20 to 1 about still at the minute, but whether we see that on the week when the bookmakers release their 8, 10, 12 places, whatever happens remains to be seen. But I just don't buy into the big narrative around him having not won. And I think his golf, especially considering some of the other guys that I've mentioned previously who are still waiting at the same time to get over the line since 2022, they are definitely not in the same form as what he is this year.
Justin, how do you assess Sander's chances?
I agree with Niall wholeheartedly in terms of the not really buying into the he can't get it over the line. I think it's because he puts himself there so often that invariably he's going to break through at some point. And he's so consistently good because he gains strokes everywhere. He doesn't have a weakness in his game. Positive strokes gained in every single category. Entering San Antonio this week, 5th off the tee, 18th approach, 9th around the green. Putting, he's still gaining strokes. He's a little bit above average. 7 straight top 20 finishes in majors. He's the only guy to make that claim. Only Patrick Reed and Cam Smith have more birdies here the last 5 years. I mean, all the signs point to this. I mean, I think a top 20 bet is an absolute – I'm mortal lock that I'm going to be on that. Probably I'm going to be on a top 10 as well. Look, he's probably the best player, most accomplished player collection right now, top of the game without a major championship yet. He has the most strokes gained total per round of anybody without a major win going back to 2000. Look, he's going to win a major championship. It's invariably going to happen. Maybe it takes, I think we were spoiled a little bit by guys like Thomas and Spieth winning so young at such big stages. These were historically young major champions. Typically, throughout the history of the game, it takes till you're 29, 30, 31. You build up a little scar tissue. You have those failures on Sunday before you break through with the big moment. So maybe it's this week in Augusta. I wouldn't be surprised. I have him second right now on my board behind Scotty.
And then a couple of players who we saw glimpses early in the season, they might be heading towards somewhere near their best. JT and Jordan Spieth, obviously Justin Thomas. Justin having a terrible year last year, and then signs of life, albeit kind of dropped off a little bit. And then we saw those strokes gained stats flying around of Spieth going into the Masters. And when he's playing well going into the Masters, he normally performs very well at Augusta. But again, things seem to have tailed off a little bit in the last couple of weeks.
Well, Spieth tends to play well at Augusta regardless. He has the most strokes gained approach per round since 2015 at Augusta National. He's 11th in putting in that span. The top three players all time at the Masters with at least 30 rounds and strokes gained total are Ben Hogan, Tiger Woods, and Jordan Spieth. That's how good he's been in his career at this golf course. There's something about knowing the nuances and stuff and the risk reward that he's able to capitalize on that's great. You know, I mentioned earlier about how past success at Augusta is as predictive as anywhere in men's golf in terms of being able to bank on future success. I tend to ride with that a little bit more with Jordan Spieth. Going back to Thomas, the split with Bones is a little bit concerning. That story that broke, I'm not really sure what was going on there. Maybe we'll learn more when JT gets into the press room in Georgia next week. But look, he did have some more promising strokes gained approach numbers earlier on in the year. He's building back up to that point. I think I've picked JT to win like five of the last 6 years at the Masters, and I think he's probably out of chances for now for me. I think I'm gonna lean away from it. He's had some high finishes. He had some progress in the beginning of his career in terms of, I think it was the first 4 years he improved upon his finish the previous year at the Masters. I'm a little cold on JT going into the week.
No, I know you need no excuse to certainly back Jordan Spieth, but are these two kind of off your radar this time around?
Slightly. I have to say that, you know, Thomas has obviously improved a lot since the back end of last year and then the start of this year. But I just don't think you go and win the Masters with having a form line coming in of, you know, cut 12, cut 64th. You know what I mean? More often than not, the Masters is won by someone who's either won earlier on in the season, had a runner-up, or is playing well in the lead, and Justin Thomas just isn't quite hitting those heights. Jordan Spieth, similar. His iron play really has been rotten in recent weeks, but I just noticed there he's 4-under through 9 holes this week, or today in Texas, so he's inside the top 15 making a run, and we've seen the round that he had yesterday was just, you know, typical Spieth, so anything can happen. And
I hope one day I can make a hole in one and not even break stride walking towards the green, which is what he did. That's unbelievable.
Well, he had to clean it up after the 7 he made a few holes before that.
Yeah.
Ultimate Spieth roller coaster experience.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so well, who knows what he's obviously getting into contention there this week too, so it would just be so Spieth, you know, get a top 5 there in Texas on this rate and go on and win the Masters when nobody is on him again. You know what I mean? Everybody kind of backed him after his first couple of years thinking he was going to do it again and again. And it's just been, you know, he hasn't quite done the business there, even though he's gone close on a few occasions since. But who knows? I don't think he'll be on my betting card anyway.
Interestingly, he's, you know, it's very early days, as we say, recording this on Friday afternoon, but he's third for strokes gained off the tee in Texas at the moment, which
he said that in his interview last night. In fact, he said, you know, I drove the piss out of the ball today. You know what I mean? He said he's been playing unbelievable golf. over the last couple of weeks, but hasn't seen the results. I don't know if I'm quite in the same camp as him, but often with him and down the years with Phil Mickelson, when they play, when they say they were playing better golf than what their results suggest, they were often right. So who knows? You know, it could lead in. He could have a good week in Texas here and then go well at Augusta this week, next week. So we'll wait and see what happens over the weekend.
We've spoken about most of the guys towards the top end of the market here. Nahu, you know, as I said, you're not writing your piece until after the weekend. So these are kind of preliminary picks, I guess. We've heard you speak positively about Xander, heard you speak positively about Joaquin Niemann. Anyone else you want to flag up?
Well, we'll move on to a couple of outsiders. Siwoo Kim's one, who's played tremendous golf this year. His ball striking has been absolutely phenomenal. I think he's a decent price. They're sitting 80 to 100 to 1 there at the minute. Whether that holds whenever the places come out on Monday is another thing. He favours accuracy a fair bit over length, which I don't think is a totally bad thing at Augusta these years. And he's having a solid year all around. He doesn't come in with winning form or anything like that, but he's having a solid year. I would question whether he's got the temperament over 4 days at Augusta to deal with whatever it throws at you. You would think someone who's won the Players, won at Sawgrass, would have the temperament for that there, but I'm not quite sure. And I'm not quite sure where he'll make the betting card yet either. But certainly at around 80 to 1 to 100 to 1, he's interesting given how well he's hit the ball from tee to green.
He did break his putter at the Masters a few years ago.
He did, yeah. He did. That stands out.
He got him with a 3-1 or something like that. So,
and he was positive straight game putting, wasn't he, as well? Which he never normally is. So maybe he should have put this.
Maybe that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Another outsider who interests me. I don't think, you know, he's got the perfect game for Augusta, but certainly profile-wise, in terms of the golf he's played over the last couple of years, I think he's interesting on a Sepp Straka. He's obviously a two-time winner now in the PGA Tour, the Honda and the John Deere. But he's had two other playoff defeats as well in that period. You know, so with an ounce more luck, he could have been a four-time PGA Tour winner just over the last couple of years. One of his defeats was to Will Zalatoris. He was runner-up. Obviously, we talked about that stepping stone earlier on. He was runner-up at the Open last year, not quite in contention over the weekend as you would like when talking about stepping stones, saying Harman had kind of run away with that over the weekend. But he was runner-up alongside Rahm, one stroke ahead of Rory McIlroy. He was second in the Hero in December, just behind Scottie Scheffler. So all that suggests that when he has a good week, it takes a good performance to beat him. The experience in the Ryder Cup is obviously a huge positive as well. So I think just the triple figure prices, I don't think Augusta suits him perfect, but certainly I think he could become a major championship golfer over the next few years. And maybe he's one to watch slightly more in the US Open and Open Championships, and we'll wait and see. But I'd almost be prepared to take a chance at Augusta this year. Just saying, some of his performances down the years have been equal. Obviously, as I mentioned, they're second and alongside big, big golfers in events, as well as winning twice and losing twice in the playoff.
So, yeah, Sepp Straka is 175-1 best price at the moment. That is with Bet365, I think. And, yeah, been a fair bit of money coming in over the last week or so. For Siwoo was kind of 150-1, now best price 100-1 with a few firms, including William Hill and a couple of others. Justin, any thoughts on those two and any players you want to put up that we haven't spoken about already?
Sepp Straka is really interesting. I think I like him a little bit more at Valhalla than this week, but he's certainly a good shout. I mean, having success on two really different golf courses in terms of his two wins at the Honda Classic and then John Deere. I mean, those are two, just the dichotomy that is, it speaks to a guy who's really talented and you can win on. Two totally different kinds of weeks.
And the amount of major champions who have won their PGA National too down the years.
Absolutely, yeah. Like a name we haven't talked about yet that I'm really high on this week is Hideki Matsuyama. His course management at Augusta National is something that's not going to get talked about a whole lot. It's not the sexiest topic, but he's fantastic at avoiding mistakes. He's second in scrambling and second in bogey avoidance at the Masters since 2015. I feel like we always talk about Hideki's approach play, his iron game, maybe the histrionics when he flips the club back and then the ball's 6 feet from the hole. But we don't really talk about how good he gets around the greens, especially at Augusta National. I think that, you know, his approach play hasn't been incredible this season, but he always finds his best self there. I think Hideki's really interesting. Him and Scotty are the only two players to finish in the top 20 each of the last four Masters as well. So consistently really good there. Another guy, he's a major champion. He's been playing some of his best golf statistically of his career so far this year on the PGA Tour. He nearly won in Florida a couple of times, just barely got beat by Scottie Scheffler and then Austin Eckroat. I'm really high on Shane Lowry. He's gaining more than 1.5 shots tee to green per round the last 3 years at the Masters. These are the best approach play numbers of his career this season. He's third right now as we speak, San Antonio week in strokes gained approach this season. His putting numbers this year on tour aren't great. They're a little concerning, but he's always putted above average at Augusta National. So I'm pretty high on Shane Lowry in terms of that previous form and what he's done this year with his approach play. And then you got to talk about Will Zalatoris. I mean, he wasn't able to be a factor last year because of the injury, but over the 21 and 22 Masters, you combine those two, nobody made more birdies at Augusta National than Will Zalatoris did. What's crazy is how much better he putts here. He gains 1.3 strokes gained putting per round in his Masters career, which is the total opposite of what we're used to in terms of seeing Will week in, week out. That's the one drawback.
That screams that screams variance to me, where he's got to have a weekend where he loses, you know, how many shots to bring it back to the mean.
Or he dials it up at Augusta National, loves fast putting surfaces, and, you know, maybe that's the magic elixir to put it together. The putting's the reason why he probably isn't a 4, 5, 6-time winner. Nearly won a major at the PGA a couple years ago, but Zalatoris is immensely talented, and I think that he's going to be a major winner at some point. But, you know, he didn't play great at Sawgrass or in Houston, but his approach play numbers are still among the best in the game. So Matsuyama, not a guy we talked a lot about. Lowry, Zalatoris are two others I like a lot too.
Yeah, I've backed Hideki, and then about 5 minutes after I backed him, I read an interview that he gave to the Japanese media about how he's playing through a massive pain barrier, which didn't fill me with too much hope.
I did not read that article. Thank you for sharing that information after giving my pick.
But, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, Ben Coley, who's, you know, a friend of the pod, he's been on this pod before a couple of times. He does this incredible player-by-player guide. And, you know, he wrote in his Hideki piece that he tipped him in 2016, 17, 18, 19, and 20, and then left him in 21. And then, of course, he won, which I think, Niall, if you read back through our WhatsApps, I think I did something similar to you every year saying this is Hideki's year. And then I'd had enough of being on that Masters app and seeing him hit the ball 6 foot on every single par four and then seeing him miss a putt and every single time. I just couldn't deal with it anymore. And then obviously he went and won.
Since I'm joining the show, that speaks highly of Justin Thomas then, because I've picked him like 5 straight years.
Yeah.
Now, when I don't, invariably
he's going to win. Break. Yeah, Hideki's 28-1, that's best price with Betway. Zalatoris 33-1, that's best price with Live Score Bet. And Shane Lowry is 50-1 with a few firms. One to throw into the mix for me, as I messaged to Niall earlier, not so much fixed price, he's 50-1 there, but you're getting 80-1 on the exchange win only for Cameron Young, which seems wild to me when you consider last year he was very much in contention until later on in the weekend. He's finished in the top 10 in 4 of the last 8 majors, which is, he seems to be one of these guys who can really turn it on. And again, some criticism about whether or not he can get over the line and win events, but the last time out, he was touched off by Malnati on the back nine, where he did very little wrong. He missed one kind of 5-footer, which I guess you could point out to, you know, often his putting stroke does seem to desert him under pressure, but that's a ridiculous number in my mind for a player who's, it's got to be one of the most talented players in golf at the moment.
Yeah, I totally agree. And his approach play numbers all year have been off the charts as well. I definitely think he's in better form this year going into the Masters than what he was last year. Obviously third in the Dubai Desert earlier on the year. I think he learned from that as well, playing with McIlroy on the final day. Since then, fourth at PGA National, second at the Valspar, as you say, just pipped by Malnati. I definitely think this form is better. He finished runner-up at the match play 2 weeks previous to last year's Masters. And his only other big finish that year was a runner-up in the Saudi International. This year is much more consistent. His putting's been inconsistent, so to speak, but on the good weeks, it's been quite good. And obviously, I think, as we touched upon Scheffler earlier on, we need a good putting week from Cameron Young if he's going to win. But then again, as you say, there's 80-1 there in exchange. I really like that price. I still quite like the 50-1 with the bookmakers too. he'll more than likely be on my betting card as well. So, yeah, I'm quite keen on Young's chances. Getting over the lines on Arthur, slightly more worrying, obviously, than Xander Schauffele's predicament coming in here, saying that he doesn't even have a PGA Tour win to this time, but it'll come together at some point, and it could easily come together at the Masters. I wouldn't put it past him.
And also his when he kind of burst onto the scene in terms of major golf was at St Andrews when he was up with Rory and Cameron Smith on that Sunday, and he was unbelievably good. Like, he was so good that day. It was so impressive how he kind of stuck with them. And I think he made a two on 18 to get a solo second as well.
Yeah, biggest hole of his life, and he made an eagle on 18 at St Andrews. I mean, yeah. I'm with Niall, and he's in the Schauffele mold too to me, where it's not he can't get over the line, it's he puts himself in this position over and over again, and eventually he's going to break through.
He started last year with three birdies as well. He was three under 3-3, and I think everybody who wasn't on at the big prices at the start of the year was ruining that mistake, but it didn't quite happen from there. But I think there's every chance he goes well this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we let you guys go, any players that you kind of would avoid that we haven't spoken about, anyone who's figures come into this setting up alarm bells?
I think we touched on Ludvig Åberg. You know, I'm a massive fan, but I can't agree with the price this time around of around 25-1. I think when you consider the two debutants, both at the same price, around 25s, Clark is the much better option. I think I'd be a bigger buyer of Ludvig Åberg's stock over the course of the next couple of decades, especially in terms of majors. But at the minute, I don't think that price is appealing. You'd be a brave man to back Åberg 25-1. But one who has a huge negative around him coming here is Victor Hovland. When we talk about stepping stones, he would have been a prime candidate for a major this year, given what he achieved last year, how close he went in a couple. Obviously, it was his best season on tour last year as well. So many wins. He split with his coach, Joe Mayo, and he's with Grant Waite now. And it's just not the preparation that you need heading into Augusta. He's not playing well, switching coach. I don't think you go and win a Masters like this. And his price hasn't even drifted to a semi-backable mark. He will win the prize for the best dressed golfer on the week, though.
Absolutely. Anyone that you're a bit concerned about coming into this week, Justin?
Hovland is a guy I have underlined seven times as to avoid. I mean, if we did this podcast in December, he might have been one of the guys I picked to win the thing. But going through the swing change, his numbers have just become completely unpredictable. I'm avoiding him just because of this sheer uncertainty. He's talented enough to maybe it's going to come and bite me, but it just hasn't been there. He's not the same guy right now as he was last year, even before the Masters, let alone late in the year when he was the best player in the world. I'm sticking away from JT again. Like I said, this will be the year that I don't pick him and he succeeds, but the bones thing really threw me off. I don't know what's going on there. He had kind of that encouraging start to the season, but the big numbers popped up that kind of plagued him last year, the double bogeys. They kind of popped up the last couple of weeks on some tougher golf courses. And then a guy who, you know, he was paired with McIlroy that final day. They had that unbelievable finish a couple of years ago. Colin Morikawa has gone from incredible with his irons to simply above average. And he's not a guy who the other parts of his game are strong enough to overcome a dip in his iron play. So I'm kind of sticking away from Colin. He played well day one in San Antonio, so maybe he proves me wrong. I wouldn't be surprised, but he's somebody I'm avoiding.
Great stuff.
I wanted to mention one more thing here, George, before we log off. And it's not one to fade, but it's just one to keep an eye on over the weekend. I've just looked at the Texas leaderboard, and Russell Henley is in the fourth place, three behind the leaders. He got his first top five at Augusta last year, and his numbers are off the charts this year as well. Certainly has the approach play, has the doggedness and determination. He's a great character as well. I think he's one who could get over the line in a major in his career. So playing well this week with what he did last year at Augusta is certainly one to keep an eye on over the weekend, and maybe is one to steal a price on Saturday and Sunday if he looks like winning this event.
Him and Tom Hoge, I think, are the two most underrated players on the PGA Tour right now.
Yeah, well, Hoge, I don't think he's in the field, does he? No, but Henley currently 100-1.
That was irrelevant to the conversation for next week. Yes. Sorry, I'm just chiming in unnecessarily. But yeah, I like Henley. You know, he contended at that U.S. Open a couple years ago when John Rahm won. He pops up on major leaderboards every now and then. I'm with Niall. He could be a prime. Another Georgia guy like Brian Harman. Maybe he has a week like that at some point in his career in the next couple of years.
Great stuff. Thank you very much to both Niall, as ever, but also Justin for joining us from 21st Group today. Fascinating insight as ever. Hopefully we've talked up the winner and not faded him, but we'll find out next week as well. Make sure you check out Odds Checker or download the app where you can find the best prices, bookie offers, free bets, and the place terms and Niall's tips when they're finalised will be over Monday.
Yep, Monday afternoon, around midday.
Monday afternoon. Thank you both very much for sharing your thoughts. Thank you guys for watching at home. Enjoy the Masters. Promises to be an incredible weekend, and please do ensure that you gamble responsibly.